Remember how after President Donald Trump ordered American forces into Venezuela to kidnap Nicolas Maduro in January, all of a sudden there was a lot of talk about how heavy Venezuela's crude oil reserves were and what that meant for international trade? Well, this week, after President Trump ordered American forces to bomb Iran, resulting in the death of Ayatollah Khamenei, a new global talking point is the Strait of Hormuz and its role as a choke point in the global economy. And that is the topic of speciality of our next guest, Associate Professor Sarah Schifling, who's a supply chain expert at the Hanken School of Economics in Helsinki. Professor Schifling, welcome to Sunday Extra.
Hello, good morning on your side of the globe.
It's great to be speaking with you. As we speak now, how much trade is passing through the Strait of Hormuz as compared to normal?
Barely anything, to be honest. There's one or two ships getting through per day, but it is very, very limited. Usually we would be expecting movements of around 100 ships per day. There's 20 million barrels of oil usually going through every single day. So that is a huge decrease in global trade in this area of the world.
So what trade sectors, obviously oil is one of them, and in what countries are most sensitive to these reductions in trade through the Strait?
So a lot of the oil and gas that is usually being traded through the Strait of Hormuz is going into Asian economies. They are the most directly affected by this. But then again, oil and gas are traded globally. So everybody is getting a bit of those price rises that we've already seen and that are predicted to get much larger if this continues to go on, if the traffic is so restricted as it is right now. But then with gas prices up and oil prices up, that really affects any industry, especially, of course, the ones that are very energy intense. So if you're looking at smelting things, that is really energy intensive, for example, but also it will affect transport. And that, of course, then affects every supply chain. So we're seeing both the increase in fuel prices, but we're also seeing ships being caught up in all of this. So there will be knock-on effects, especially if this continues longer term.
You've also written that there's a lesser known dependency in terms of the fertilizer trade through the Strait. Could you tell us about that?
Yeah, that's maybe a lesser known fact, but the Strait of Hormuz is also the source of about a third of global fertilizer supplies. And that, of course, goes into agricultural supply chains. Now, these have already been affected by Russia's war in Ukraine, which is also key areas for agricultural products, but also for fertilizer. So this might have longer term knock-on effects. Of course, this is not quite as immediate as the oil and gas prices going up. A lot of farmers are probably set up for what they need right now, but longer term for the Northern Hemisphere summer yields this year or going into next year, this might become real trouble again if this persists.
We've heard a lot of talk about things like, you know, mines in the Strait of Hormuz and the like, but you've described what's actually happening there as the strategic use of maritime vulnerability as leverage. Could you elaborate on that phrase a little bit more for us?
I think the phrase of closing the Strait of Hormuz is a bit misleading. It sounds like you're kind of closing a door. There's no physical barrier. It's open and it is not mined as of right now. And given the large presence of US naval forces in the region, it's probably unlikely that Iran will be able to pull off a larger scale mining operation. A lot of the Navy has now been hit from what we've heard. However, just the risk factor of several vessels have been attacked. We haven't seen like a large scale sinking, but we have had small fires on board. We have had crews evacuated from vessels, and that creates this uncertainty. A lot of insurers have withdrawn the policies for any vessels going into this area of the world, and most shippers are rerouting or they're kind of in holding patterns, seeing what will happen, seeing what will develop. But currently the vessels are not going through except for very rare exceptions.
You mentioned the possible sinking of a tanker. What sort of effect would a really physical impact on the Strait of Hormuz like that have compared to the sort of choking through perceived risk that we've been talking about so far?
That would obviously be disastrous for the environment. That would be absolutely horrendous. But also in terms of if we have a large vessel sinking right in these shipping lanes, the shipping straits are relatively narrow there. It's about 2 miles across, which sounds like a lot. But then you compare it to the size of these tankers. A large scale tanker is about 4 football pitches in length. So you can imagine 2 miles is actually not that wide. So if we had a tanker sinking in those shipping lanes, it would really be difficult to reopen the shipping lanes to have safe shipping there with a huge salvage operation, probably. So that might be a potential longer term disruption, even if the war were to end.
On Sunday Extra, we're speaking with Associate Professor Sarah Schifling, who's a supply chain expert at the Hanken School of Economics in Helsinki. And Sarah, I know this is an area of particular interest for you. I wonder if you could speak to us about the impact of the constriction on the Strait of Hormuz and the Iran conflict more generally on humanitarian aid.
Yes, so I work at a humanitarian logistics research center, so this is a topic very close to my heart. And we have a huge humanitarian logistics hub in Dubai. That's usually a really good area to have a lot of humanitarian aid supplies kind of stockpiled because it's very close. It's got really good transport links by sea as well as by air to all sorts of different regions of the world that might be vulnerable to disasters. So this is where large organizations like the World Health Organization have a lot of their stocks. It's been really difficult to get those stocks moving right now because in addition to the maritime shipments being constrained, we're also seeing that the airports have been closed or have very restricted operations. So getting, especially those sort of health supplies that can be quite urgent, getting those moving into crisis areas around the world has been a real problem. There are other hubs as well, but Dubai has really established itself with its humanitarian city as a really big regional hub for a lot of large humanitarian organizations.
So specifically, which sort of which humanitarian crises are being most dramatically affected by what's happened in Iran in the last week?
So we're having effects on several crises around Africa, just because ships are being hauled up, ships are being rerouted, and we're also seeing an effect on Gaza, where humanitarian needs are very, very high, and any delay to supplies going in that direction is obviously very crucial for the people there and can be of vital importance to get these supplies moving.
Yeah, and so what are the ways of minimizing those impacts? I suppose, is there like a contingency plan for the humanitarian sector when things like this happen?
So humanitarian sector operates in a way that has several different hubs. So currently organizations are rerouting supplies. There's the European hub for the UN system, for example, is in Brindisi in Italy. So you're rerouting through there, you're having shipments going through this. But of course, supplies that are already in a Dubai warehouse, having to rebuy those now, especially for things that might have a short shelf life, that is quite difficult. So there are contingency plans. There are different hubs you can move to. It's not quite as extreme as you would say, for example, an airline headquartered in Dubai or Doha, but it has a massive impact and it has an impact on a lot of different areas of supply chains globally.
Yeah, and is it more the fact that Dubai has been the subject of attacks by Iranian drones and the like than the shipping factors that are really hitting hardest in terms of humanitarian supplies?
It kind of depends on what supply. So humanitarian supplies are shipped both by air and by sea. So if you're having medical shipments, for example, they would typically go out by air. They are relatively smaller scale and also need to move more quickly. Whereas if you have food supplies that might be larger in volume, they might typically go out by sea. So it depends on what you've got by air right now. We've got quite constrained operations. The airports in Dubai and Doha and so on are pushing to reopen at least some capacities. And of course, we've seen some of the evacuation flights as well leaving there. Then by sea, where you have the larger scale things, yes, there are some ports that are kind of on the eastern side of the Arabian Peninsula, but they will have quite high demand from other vessels trying to reroute there. So getting priority there, that is really a key concern now for humanitarian shipments as well, to have the very limited capacities, but trying to get those life-saving goods in there.
And you've written that disruptions at maritime choke points are likely to remain an enduring feature of geopolitical tensions. I wonder if you could speak a little bit more about that. And I suppose the other question is, we're all focused on the Strait of Hormuz at the moment, but what are the other maritime choke points that could become a problem?
Oh, I think we've all become familiar with a couple of them over the last few years. You might recall the Suez Canal being blocked by the vessel, the Ever Given. That was an intense week for global trade. The Suez Canal is a major choke point of traffic going between Asia and Europe mostly. So that had a really huge effect. And then also the knock-on effects. The disruption was a week, but then you had for a month afterwards, you had the disruption going on. Then something that's also become more relevant again now is the Bab al-Mandeb. That is kind of the southern entry to the Red Sea, going then towards the Suez Canal. So the same shipping lane, if you will. And that one has been attacked by Houthi rebels quite a bit over the last 2 years. We've seen the traffic there slowing dramatically. And now a lot of shippers are worried that the Houthi might also become part of this wider Middle Eastern war and resume their attacks on shipping there. So shipping there has already decreased quite dramatically. We've been down for the traffic figures that we've got for the Suez Canal. It's about half of what used to be in 2023 for the years 2024 and 2025 while those attacks were ongoing. And now more shippers still are rerouting. Now, rerouting, that's the trouble with choke points, isn't that easy? Because if you're not going through the Red Sea and the Suez Canal, you're going around Africa. That's like a 2-3 week delay, which then means the vessel is not where it's supposed to be. The receivers of all that cargo are waiting, and the vessel cannot do its next journey on time. So it's just got this knock-on effect and gets later and later and has more and more consequences.
Fascinating stuff. Sarah Schiffling, thank you so much for joining us on Sunday Extra this morning.
Thanks for having me.
That's Associate Professor Sarah Schiffling, Assistant Professor of Supply Chain Management and Social Responsibility is the full title at the Hanken School of Economics in Helsinki. And on Sunday Extra, it is 23 minutes past 7.
Find more great ABC RN stories that take you beyond the headlines on the ABC Listen app.